Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
All right, we're in the playbook. Just like Paul Perillo wants to be. He could, you know. He could stay, and he could be in the playbook if he wanted to.
I don't think
to.
He would fit.
You're probably right
about
that.
The playbook is. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'll be here all week. Welcome inside the playbook for a Thursday.
Try the veal.
Yeah, really try the veal. Is the veal any good? John Rook here with Eric
Scalavino. He's had plenty of it.
PFW. Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay. It's going to be one of those days, isn't it?
I guess. Yeah. Cheap shot central.
You kind of set the tone here. That's all right. We were just talking about, yeah, absolutely. All right, we were just talking about, obviously, Miami and getting ready for the Dolphins and such. And my question to the doctor on the other side of the glass here was, where's our buddy Armando Salguero from the Miami Herald? Because, quite frankly, we had a great conversation with him when we played him last, right? He was very good on the air. He's very open. He's very forthright. And I said, you know, was he not available? Could we not schedule him? Whatever.
What happened?
And Doc says what?
Well, he could have been unavailable and we couldn't get him. But I like to think my other explanation was what
was better. You want to tell it, or should I?
You can.
Wuss.
I take the fifth.
He's a wuss.
He is.
The Patriots fans who were at the game, the Miami game, exactly. Do you remember what happened up on the video board late in the game in the final seconds? Anybody remember what happened?
I didn't see it.
Okay, well, you were either you were downstairs or down in the tunnel. You didn't see it. There was a graphic that was put up on the ProVision screens here at Gillette Stadium. That stated Joey Porter had
zero
tackles.
Point zero
tackles. 0.0 tackles. And the fans got a real kick out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I got a particularly good kick out of it because I saw it. I'm like, what the hell is that doing up there? I mean, I thought that was pushing the envelope a little bit.
Was your mic open at the time?
No, no. Oh, no. I wouldn't have said that on the microphone. No, but we all noticed it in the booth. The stat booth next door to us noticed it.
Uh-huh.
And they're all, like, pointing up there, and they're, like, looking at me. And I'm like, I didn't do that.
So how does this relate to our friend Armando?
Because our friend Armando, I guess, was less than complimentary about the little one-upsmanship, the little showmanship.
What's it to him?
I don't know.
See, he's not on the payroll, is he?
Well, I didn't think he was.
And there's nobody else in Miami who covers that team we could have gotten? You didn't try, did you?
Here's the excuse. I'm sorry to give you the excuse. Sit down, Eric. I'll give you the excuse. Okay. Ready? I have two other people who handle the booking of the guests.
Oh, yeah. The buck passer.
It didn't happen.
Buck That's passer. Right. Who do they report to?
Me.
Oh.
So it is my fault, but I wasn't physically the one dialing the phone.
This is turning into a contentious day here.
Wow.
Oh.
Way to go, Doc. Way to leave Rook hanging inside the playbook all by himself.
No, I have you. I have Russell today.
Like I said, you're all by yourself.
No. I
just got a phone call from one of the guys who was booking the guests.
Yes.
And unfortunately, based on where Dolphins media availability falls out, that also precluded us from having it.
Gotcha. So, in other words, it's happening like now?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that has happened. And
there was some potential availability for hour number two, but we already have a very good guess in hour number two.
We had a guy covering the Titans calling us from practice, if I recall.
We did.
Remember?
It's true. We did, I think.
That's practice. You hear the whistles.
That's guy.
In the
that's right. Yeah, that's right. The guy.
Buy that excuse about access.
You know what? That's okay. You know what? We're very grateful for the people that come onto this program and to give us their time to talk to the fans. We understand the schedules sometimes do not mix, and it just happens. And so we're here, and we're very used to making chicken salad out of chicken feathers. You know, that's what we do here. Not that this is chicken feathers by any means anyway. But you know what? I think we have actually a pretty good rapport here, and we, you know, can agree to disagree on some things, and we go back and forth. And so I'm grateful for that, because what it all is all about here is just creating some
content.
Yes, and opinion. Or opinion and content, whichever you prefer. Sometimes they're kind of one and the same. So because of that, let's look forward now to the game on Sunday, which I don't think, even though I already gave a score prediction at 33-24. And by the way, your score predictions for Sunday are welcome, webradio@patriots.com. So please fire off. And if you have a comment that you would like to make to us in person, so to speak, pick up the phone and dial 508-543-7482. You're welcome on the show. I think this is going to be a little closer than people think. I realize that missing Ronnie Brown is liable to be substantial and probably is the difference maker in this one. I just think that people's memories are very short. And I think you have to understand the kind of trouble. You have to go back a few years with this football team. And I think you have to understand the kind of trouble that they have had playing in Miami.
Oh,
regardless,
God, yeah.
Regardless of what the respective records are.
Yeah.
I mean, who can forget a few years ago when Miami was just got awful and they came in and whipped us in the last game of the year? Something about the Dolphins and this rivalry between the Patriots and the Dolphins just tells me that, you know, if you think that this is going to be a rout, I think you're sadly mistaken. Now, I would like nothing more than that, but I just don't see it happen.
Yeah, especially in a year where they haven't won a game on the road. I discount the London game. That wasn't really a road game.
No, it wasn't a road game.
But all the other games on the road,
that's,
they've lost.
That worries me. And then when you couple that with the fact that traditionally Miami's a very tough place to play, mm-hmm. The fact that Miami's season is on the brink here and it is over, their last month of the season is meaningless if they lose this game. I just think that they're going to be, you know, they'll have their backs to the wall, and they were embarrassed at Buffalo, for God's sake. I mean, how does that happen? How do you get embarrassed by Buffalo? But they were. And so
they're not that good a team. That's why.
Okay, maybe they're not. And maybe that's giving everybody here a little bit more of a sense of security about the game. I'm like running the red flag up the pole here. And I'm saying, well, wait a minute. We shouldn't be confident in anything that this Patriots team does right now after the show that we saw on Monday night.
Well, I think that what I've been hearing in the locker room this week is a consistent theme of the line of questioning and the responses to those questions.
All right.
Has been about what we just talked about, not being able to win on the road. And in the history of this team under this head coach and this quarterback, it seems like when there's a general consensus in the locker room about something in particular, an issue or a game or a player or whatever, that week we tend to see that happen. So the fact that I think that they're concentrating so much on focused on winning a game on the road and talking about it, taking it seriously, I think will that bodes well, I think, for this week's game. I think they're really going to take it, not that they don't take other games seriously, but when they start talking about an issue like that over and over again, it tells me that there's a greater emphasis placed on it in meetings and in film study and all that stuff.
Okay.
Psychologically, I think that
then
they...
That's good to hear. That's obviously good to hear, that at least mentally these guys are getting on the right track again.
They're at least acknowledging that they have a problem.
And that's one thing that I think has carried over a bit from some previously more veteran teams, is that this team has done a good job of focusing week to week and putting something behind them that they need to and going on to the next thing, which we all can admit here is very much needed this week. Mm. Got to put Monday behind you. Got to move on. You got 5 games left to play. Win them all. And you and I were just talking about this. Okay, so let's let everybody else in on the conversation.
Yep.
We were talking about this before we got on the air here. Patriots went out. They're still probably the 2 seed in this conference, and that's not a bad thing.
No, and I think they're going to need to be the 2 seed, I think, if they want to get to the Super Bowl. Because I think their best chance is somebody upsetting Indianapolis in the divisional round. And allowing New England to be home and win and play the AFC Championship game here in Foxborough.
I'll buy that as a possibility.
Because if they have to go on the road, based on what we've seen so far,
it's not going to be good.
It's not going to do them any good to go on the road.
The other thing is, and we're getting way ahead of ourselves here, but you know, obviously they've lost a couple of these games to quote unquote dome teams. Mm-hmm. And should they get into a situation where, you know, they would win the AFC, at least they have the satisfaction of knowing you're going to be outdoors.
Yeah.
I don't know how much it changes it.
Well, I suppose it does a little bit. I mean, I think this team has played...
I think from a psychological standpoint.
Yeah. This team always plays well in the elements.
Right.
more often than not, I should say, not always, but they more often than not play well in the elements, especially if it snows.
I think the elements agree with this team. I just, for some reason or another, I think that the elements agree with this team. I think that they kind of look at that as sort of a badge of honor.
A badge of honor.
That they wear with playing as a member of the New England Patriots. Mm-hmm. And that, okay, you know, we're in New England, and this is who we are, this is where we play, and this stuff isn't going to bother me. In fact, I welcome it. Bring it on!
Yep.
And that's, I think they've always embodied that persona here in New England through the good teams and the bad.
And you know what, I think running the table in the regular season is not out of the question for this team. I mean, earlier, I think at the bye week, we went through our second half predictions, and I think I said 11-5, you said 12-4. If I'm not mistaken.
Right.
Which would mean they'd have to stumble one more time if my prediction were to be accurate. But
that's right.
I'd rather my prediction not be accurate.
Right.
Because I think for their sake, they need to go 12-4. Hopefully Cincinnati or San Diego stumbles once or twice more and New England can get that second
seed. I did think 12-4 was a likely outcome for this team. I will admit that. But in order to achieve that now, they've got to run the table.
Yeah.
I have my doubts about this team running the table based on what we saw last week and based upon the fact that they've got to play in Miami this week. Yep. I think this is the toughest, in my estimation, and I'm gonna hold aside one perhaps here.
Houston.
Before I say that. Yes, yeah. Yes. But I think this is the toughest of the last five games that they have to play. Now, let me bring in that other side, the Houston game at the tail end of the year. If the Texans are in position to get into the playoffs in that last game of the season, all bets are off.
Right.
And I have to admit, if I was going to put some money down, and if the Patriots already have the division clinched and they can't clinch number two, at least in the conference, there's no way they win that game. I don't think it happens. Not on the road, especially. Mm. With more riding on it, I mean, it's a franchise-making potential game for the Houston Texans.
Yeah.
And if the Patriots cannot at least clinch the two seed, let's say they're eliminated. Say Cincinnati's already got it or whatever, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, they can't improve themselves and they can't lessen themselves. There is no shot. None.
Well,
zero.
I won't go far to say there's no shot because with this coaching quarterback, there's always a shot.
Okay, all right. There would be
I'll give you one shot. I see your point. It will be a much more difficult game than it would have appeared a month or two ago.
Yes, that is correct. Other than that, save for that, I think this team certainly is in position, based on the opposition on down the stretch here, to win them all, finish 12-4, and be right there for the two seed. So, you know, in the grand scheme of things, how bad is it? Well, you know what? It's not horrible. It's not entirely off what we predicted would happen. Before the bye week, we were talking about this before the bye week. You were accurate on the bye week prediction at 5-2. You're accurate. And then, you know, then we talked about the next stretch, which is the next five games. And I said, I think it's crucial for this team to go 3-2 in those next five. They have a chance to do that. If they beat Miami, they'll be 3-2 in those next five.
Yeah.
And then if they get through that and they can get through this weekend and that accomplishment, all that's left is to sweep December, which the track record would indicate the Patriots have had good success with. They've always done well in recent times in December.
Mm-hmm.
The schedule is somewhat favorable. Again, putting aside this Houston game because we just can't get an accurate read on that yet.
Right.
So, you know, part of me is going to root for Houston a little bit and go ahead and get them in the Derby. Because my guess would be if Houston's already somehow in the Derby, they rest guys.
I don't know. I can't get a read on that team at
all. What are they, 5-6? Or are they 6-5?
I can't remember.
I don't have the standings in front of me. I think they're 5-6.
You have the internet up there?
Okay.
Check up NFL.com.
Then talk amongst yourselves while I look at this here.
Well, yeah, the only problem with that 3-2 if they beat Miami this week is I think it's a little bit of a deceptive 3-2 because I was, like, I think we talked about this yesterday. I was expecting one of those three wins to be against either New Orleans or Indianapolis, and that would have added a little bit more clout to that 3-2.
Mm-hmm.
This way, it's sort of it's kind of like a consolation 3-2. You know, it's a winning record, but it's against teams that you were expected to beat, teams in your division. You know, they were expected to win the division this year, regardless. So, I agree. I'm at the point where I have little confidence in the long term. But yet I still expect them to, in the short term, have success and have enough success that, you know, they need a lot of things to fall into place in these last 5 weeks as far as other teams losing, as far as how they play against these teams that they're supposed to beat. And, you know, a lot can happen in 5 weeks. We've seen it the last 4 or 5 years. Arizona last year had a run after they got demolished here in Foxborough.
Right.
The Giants had they didn't look like they were going to make the playoffs the year they beat us in the Super Bowl.
That's true.
The Colts
stumbled in a little.
Didn't have a defense until December showed up, and then they ran the table and won the Super Bowl. The Steelers were a 6 seed, weren't they, when they beat Seattle? They were the 6 seed.
6 seed, yeah. That sounds right.
And they ran the table there doing that. I mean, so it's not unprecedented, and especially if recent history is the guide, it's almost a given that a team is going to have a run like that. And, you know, it would serve New England if they could be that team this year, because they certainly need it.
Well, you froze the computer on me here. So
what did I do?
I don't know, but it's not answering me. I'm pretty sure they're 5 and 6. At any rate, great timing, huh? Need something done, it ain't getting done. All right, so, look, it just moved. Wow. Whose server is this anyway? Seems like every time we need to get on something here, everybody's on at the same time. Kind of crowding things here. Scores, players, stats, standings. Brilliant! Absolutely brilliant! Okay. Checking the standings.
Brilliant!
As soon as the page loads. My God. Yes, 5 and 6. Thank God.
Right.
Probably had 65 people email me telling me, yes, they're 5 and 6, damn it, move on. They're 5 and 6. They're tied with Tennessee. They are one game behind Jacksonville. So you look at the way the playoffs are set up.
That's a huge game this week, then.
It is a huge game, Houston at Jacksonville. Now, I suppose you could root for Jacksonville, knock Houston out of it, then it makes pretty much no difference what happens the last week, if you're looking at it from that point of view.
Well, but then Jacksonville has hope when we have to play Jacksonville.
That's also true. Jacksonville's still very much in it. You have... let's see, you got the Colts, then you'd have the Chargers, you have the Bengals, you have the Patriots as the divisions. The wild cards right now would be Denver and...
Where's San Diego in that mix? They're the division leader?
Yeah, they're the division leader. You'd have Denver as a wild card, and then the next one would either be Jacksonville, Baltimore, or Pittsburgh. And based on conference record, Jacksonville. How about
really?
That? Right now, yeah, they're 5 and 2 in the conference, whereas Baltimore's 6 and 4. How about that?
Huh.
Jacksonville's holding on to the 6th spot right now.
That's ridiculous.
Over Baltimore. Pittsburgh is 4 and 4.
That's ridiculous.
Pittsburgh is 4 and 4. They're a game and a half out.
Well, I'm fine not seeing Pittsburgh in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as many troubles as they're having right now, I wouldn't want to face that team in the playoffs.
But let's also remember now, you've got, you know, and those are all the teams at 6 and 5. You have New York, you have Miami, you have Tennessee, and you have Houston lurking another game back at 5 and 6.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 4, 5, 6, 7 teams fighting for the last 2 spots. Mm-hmm. No, 1 spot. 7 teams fighting for the last playoff spot.
And
Denver. Denver's got a game lead on them at 7 and 4.
Indy's the only team that in the NFL that's
clinched a
playoff
spot. That is correct, at 11-0. Yeah.
Because even the Saints, where I was looking at it earlier today, the Saints have, I think they have to win one more division game before they can clinch their division.
Yes.
They're 3-0.
Yes, that is correct.
That's the only thing that's keeping them
from
having clinched.
They have
spot.
A 5-game lead overall with 5 to play.
Yeah.
Over Atlanta. Atlanta's 6 and 5.
Yeah.
But yes, that is correct. Within the division, one more division win, they got it.
Yeah, and so. In the Packer, the Vikings haven't clinched yet either because
no, they have not.
Green Bay's right on their tail.
Green Bay is 7 and 4. Minnesota's 10 and 1, so they're 3 back with 5 to play.
And their division record is probably
division record: Vikings 5-0, Packers 3-2. One more loss.
Right.
Well, no, wait a second. No,
well,
no,
they should.
No, that's technically
they only have one
division.
More game then.
They've only got one more game in the division.
Then
so Minnesota's
Minnesota
on the
should have clinched
well,
by now.
No, not technically. If they finish out and Green Bay wins out, then Green Bay's 12 and 4, Minnesota's 10 and 6. So mathematically,
okay.
They wouldn't
all right,
be in.
I guess. Yeah. Makes, all right. All right.
In spite of the division record.
All right.
So I think they've got to get to, if let's put it this way, if Minnesota won this week and Green Bay lost, I think
that's
it would take care of it.
Yeah.
So they look like they will be the next team to clinch something. All right, so we spent way too much time on that one. But the fact is that Houston is one of seven teams right now fighting for the last playoff spot in the AFC.
But I'm glad we've gotten to this point in the season where we can start talking
about
these scenarios.
Looking
about
this stuff? Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's what you play all year for. You know?
Of course you do. Yeah, we were just, in fact, we were talking about this as well before we got started. It's kind of like, okay, we got another month to go to the season. Can we get to the playoffs?
Can we get it going?
We kind of already know the teams pretty much are going to be there. Kind of figure out where the seed might be, so let's just go ahead and play, you know?
Yeah.
It's not quite that easy. We can't quite get there like that, but, you know, I kind of get that feeling, and I think that's the way it's going to be for much of the month of December. And so you have to hope now that, you know, for the guys down the hallway here, that isn't the case at all, that they can remain somewhat focused and they can remain somewhat motivated to continue to try to improve themselves because of all the places that we saw that are in dire need of improvement. I mean, you throw up one stinker, you can kind of understand it, but you throw up a stinker with the results that you had this past Monday, it's kind of like, okay. You know, it's probably good that we're kind of getting this out now in retrospect, because now they at least know that they're not masking anything, that they can try to attack these problems and work on those problems.
Yeah.
Did we have anything from practice to report today at all?
Mostly good news. Only two players absent, Fred Taylor, as usual, and Brett Lockett.
Hmm.
And Sebastian Vollmer was back after his head injury the past week that he sat out. They were inside the bubble where it was a little bit warm in there, so I think they're simulating the South Florida weather conditions as much as they can.
Good.
Even though it's a balmy 60-something out there today.
Can you believe this?
Bright sun. I woke up. The rain and wind woke me up this morning.
We had a good old-fashioned nor'easter blow through here, but the problem was is that it didn't bring anything from the north. It brought everything from the south.
Right.
So do we call it a
south-easter?
A south-easter? Because it's 60 degrees outside.
Woke up this morning, torrential rain, winds up to 50 miles an hour. They were
power
saying,
lines were down everywhere.
Yeah, tree branches were all over the place. By the time I got to work, the sun was out.
Yeah, how about
and it's
that?
It's been warm and
it's
sunny
been gorgeous.
All day. Yeah,
it's been an unbelievably gorgeous December day.
But they went inside to turn the heat up probably a little bit more to get it more like
and they should
you know humid conditions in there.
Need to do that.
And they're wearing the throwbacks this week. It's a legacy game.
Oh, I'd forgotten that this was the last one. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're wearing. The offense is wearing the red shirts, which means to me the Dolphins are going to wear their white uniforms and New England's going to wear the red. That's what they've done the other two times they've worn the red.
I like the red.
I love the red.
The
uniforms.
Reds are great.
Really
the all whites I didn't like as much. I mean, they're more of a classic uniform look, but I think fans around here,
I like the
they
red.
Go buy the red jerseys.
I like the red.
Yeah, the reds are a keeper.
So there you go. I mean, if they can just get Fred Taylor back.
Well, I have to admit, you know, I'm, again, trying to find all of the, you know, the positive, you know, silver linings out of the debacle on Monday. The fact that Sammy Morris was back in there was, you know, certainly, I think, welcome.
Matt Light came back.
Matt Light was back and certainly welcome, although I'd really like to see that offensive line with Vollmer on one side and Light on the other.
I kind
what do you
of agree
think the odds?
That.
What do you think the odds are of something like that happening?
Not this year. Maybe next year.
Maybe.
Just because I think at this point in the season, I think it might be a little too drastic a change for Light, who's always played on the left side, to get over there and start, you know.
I just think a guy like Vollmer needs to play, you know. I mean, it's unlike, I mean, I realize Matt didn't do anything to lose his job, but, you know, really like to see, you know, Vollmer in there.
I mean, he got some great experience while Light was out.
And I think we've seen
against some good competition.
And I think we've seen he's one of the draft picks that seems to have worked out for this team.
I agree. But I think, given where they are right now, I think stability is probably key at that position right now as they, you know, try to win these last five games. Next year, different story. Next year, all positions up for grabs.
Wide open, huh?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm not just on the line.
I'm talking about the tackle.
Tackle.
Well, yeah, obviously other places too, but if we're talking about this position in particular, I think Light is your front, Vollmer's your front runner for that left side. Next year, I think you put some serious competition. They'll have to really think about what they want to do to reorganize the bookends.
Right.
But for now, it might be in their best interest to leave well enough alone, unless something you know, someone starts playing really badly and something necessitates it. But
right.
I don't think they've been that bad that often that they need to do that right now.
How about the play? I'm going to go back to looking at the entire you know picture here in the AFC. The play of Tennessee and what Vince Young has done.
I'm stunned.
Since they were 0-6.
I'm stunned, actually.
And they've won five straight. And the drive that he had this last week,
yeah,
you know, to
beat
the Cardinals.
99 yards, 18 plays, was it? Something like that?
Something like that. You know, certainly the irony was not lost on me of, you know, here's Vince Young one-upping Matt Leinart again. But at the same time,
yeah,
to come back from, I mean, if there's ever a team that has come back from the absolute dead,
oh, it's Tennessee.
It'd have to be Tennessee.
And against a good team, Arizona's a good,
yeah,
NFC team.
Sure they are. They're absolutely good.
They were doing it against Tampa Bay,
no,
or some other, you know.
I have to admit, that's, I think, one of the more remarkable, probably not talked about enough stories, you know, at least in the NFL over the course of the last month, is Tennessee's revival. You know, because here's, you know, Jeff Fisher, I've always thought was a good coach. He is, you know, got great tenure in the league now. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think he's number one in the league in tenure overall in terms of one franchise,
team, yeah,
because he was actually the coach when they were the Houston Oilers.
Right.
So he's been with the team, you know, well into his, you know, he's into his second decade now.
15 years, I think.
Right. And they were talking about, you know, firing him, and he had to be gone, and there's nothing left for him to do here, and how can he possibly regroup? And mm-hmm. this team was missing more than just, you know, their problems on offense with, you know, Collins. You know, they really missed Albert Haynesworth, and there are all kinds of problems. They had problems in the secondary injury. I mean, we saw it. A 59-0 shellacking here. That didn't even look like an NFL team out there when they played here earlier this year.
Yeah, that was a joke.
And then what they've done now is they've played themselves with five straight wins, unbelievable as it is,
yeah,
to within a game of the last playoff spot.
I know. And doing it with Vince Young, who's had his, you know, his problems have been well documented as far as off the field.
Sure.
And how that translated on the field, where, you know, he couldn't run the offense or whatever. And he's
running
it now.
He looks
like a different player.
Well, you know what?
He looks more like the player we saw at Texas.
But he's being smarter with the ball. He's not taking off and running as much. He knows when to take a sack. I saw that last week. I would tell you that I actually think it's sort of a tough way to go through it, but I think sitting on the bench and having him watch Collins have the success that he did is bound to have rubbed off in some form or fashion.
Wow.
He's learned how to stay in the pocket a little mm-hmm. bit better. He also knows that when he has the opportunity to run, he's still very much got the legs to get him there.
Yep.
And, you know, frankly, even though I know he's probably reluctant to do it, I wish Tom would do that. I wish Brady would do that, because we've seen some opportunities for him to take off the ball,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then go ahead and slide in, do whatever you want.
Yep.
But he's got a chance to make something out of nothing, and yet, you know, Brady did this last week, in fact, against New Orleans, and stayed in the pocket, decided to throw the ball, and that's on a couple of those occasions when he overthrew his intended receiver. Yeah. One of them was Aiken, who was wide open down deep. So I'm like, you know, all right, you took a shot, but he still had like 10 yards in front of him.
Actually, I think on the first interception to McKenzie,
he had time.
I thought he was running with it,
yeah,
and at the last second he threw it, and yeah. That was one of those examples where I thought he was going to make something out of that.
That's got to be one of the toughest decisions, I guess, that a quarterback would have to make is, you know, all right, when to pull up and try to make something out of nothing and when to take a stab. You know, the idea here is to have, you know, hopefully a presence of mind if you've got enough room in the pocket to move, where if you actually start to make a move to the line of scrimmage, you know, you sucker the backers or the defensive backs to come up and,
yep,
and find you, and then the receiver stays deep and you throw over the top.
Yeah.
That's almost an old Tim Tebow type of move,
yeah,
which we've seen him do that at Florida.
The jump pass.
The jump passes almost,
yeah,
you know. He stands there, makes a move to the line of scrimmage, linebackers freeze, and hello, doink, I'm going,
yeah,
right over the top.
Got to really be conscious of the line of scrimmage on those
absolutely
plays, because, you know,
that's when you start
taking off.
That's why defensively, Eric, it's so important that your defensive line not just be a two-gap type of let's just hold the line type of thing. You've got to make pressure in the other team's backfield.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to push tackles and guards backwards.
Yeah.
You must have pressure. If you
don't
have pressure, you are not a good defense. I don't care how many picks you have. I don't care if your linebackers all lead the league in tackles. You're not a good defense. I would tell you that you are a bend and sometimes break defense, not a bend but don't break defense, unless you can put pressure,
yeah,
in the opposing team's offensive backfield. And that's one of the things the Patriots defense is not doing.
No, you're right. And I agree. I understand the concept of the two gap and trying to hold the line there.
Right.
But I think my mentality, if I were coaching, would be the same as yours. Why not try to disrupt the play before it begins? Don't let the play come to you. Go to the play and disrupt it. And it starts with the quarterback. Get in his face. Get to the, you know, get to the running back when he takes the handoff. I mean, I don't know. It seems it's got to be more difficult than that, but it seems kind of simplistic to say it. But I think you're right, though.
Another team is dropping football. Did you see that?
The Flying Dutchman.
Yeah. dropping football. That's sad. I mean, obviously Northeastern dropped it, you know, a couple of weeks ago, but that's very, very sad. Actually, Hofstra wasn't bad this year.
I was going to say, I didn't think Hofstra had a bad program.
No, they were 500. They were 5-6 anyway in the Colonial.
But was it more monetary?
Yeah, that's what it says. It says here that $4.5 million spent annually in the football program, and they're going to move it to scholarships and other priorities. So that's two teams now in the former 1AA, called the Football Championship Subdivision now, two teams in the same conference in the Colonial that have dropped football in the last 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
More to come?
I don't know.
Well, everybody says University of Rhode Island should have gone years ago.
Oh, yeah. I agree with that.
But, you know, they don't seem to be in position to do that just yet. Interesting.
And the state could use the money.
Here's the thing. It goes to show you that unless you're all in, why do it?
Right.
What's the point?
Exactly.
If you're not all in, if you're not buying into this, if you're not upgrading, if you're not going to go and compete at the highest level,
why bother?
Why compete?
Why bother?
Now, to me, that's almost an indictment on intercollegiate athletics altogether, because that's not what intercollegiate athletics is supposed to be about.
It's not what it's supposed to be about, right.
But in effect, that's what these programs are saying. We're not going all in because we don't believe in it. We're spending too much money. We've got other priorities.
Mm-hmm.
It's a shame that it has to come down to that.
Yeah.
All right, webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is our telephone number. Eric Scalavino, John Rook in the playbook.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay. Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got razor-sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game. I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
Right, so, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
John and Eric inside the playbook here on a Thursday. Russell Baxter from ESPN will join us here in 25 minutes or so. In the meantime, plenty of time for you to get your emails in at webradio@patriots.com. NFL.com. Matt Kersey writes, I heard some rumors that Tom Brady may have a head injury and may be out for this week. Any truth to this?
I don't know where he heard that from.
I'm not sure where he heard that from either. But not to my knowledge.
No, nothing we've heard.
He was out there practicing, right?
Yeah. We talked to him yesterday in the at his press conference. He didn't look any worse the wear. Didn't see anything that happened in the game Monday night. He was out there today running around doing everything. I mean, we'll get an injury report in about an hour and a half.
That's all I need.
That's news to me.
I'm good with that.
Where's that report coming from?
No, he didn't say. That's all he wrote. Rich from Maine. Guys, old-time Pats fan here since the 60s. Couldn't watch them until the mid-70s as my father thought the AFL was nothing more than a semi-pro team. He would know he played for the Providence Steamrollers. How about that?
Wow, back in the they played the first night game in NFL history.
That's correct. That is correct. As for my question, do you have a different view on BB going forward on 4th-and-2 after watching how the defense played on Monday? Insert Andy calling me an idiot here. As for screaming for Bill Belichick's head, do you want to go back to the coaches with 1-15 teams? Rod Rust? No, thank you.
No. I
did his coaches show that one year.
Did you really?
Yes, I did.
Oh, boy. You poor thing.
Oh, he was a nice enough guy to work with. He was fine.
Boy, but that must have been tough, though.
That was back in 1990.
90. Yeah, 1990, yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't feel differently about 4th-and-2 or about the defense. I mean, I don't mind the coach being confident in his offense. I think it's more that he's confident in his offense than he was not confident in his defense.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just think the play call on that particular play, you're talking about the Colts 4th-and-2, obviously. You know, the route that Kevin Falk ran was right. I mean, we talked about this ad nauseum at the time, but the route was, you know, a little bit shorter a route than I would have expected. Maybe he didn't have time to make it long. I don't know. But I don't have a problem with the call. I don't have a problem with their going forward and fourth down against the Saints.
No, I don't really either. I just think it's, I mean, you have to utilize some common sense. And frankly, you know, if you're telling me you're going for it on 4th-and-2 because you have no confidence in your defense, then why are you even throw the defense out there at all? I mean, if you really have that little confidence in your defense, then why aren't you going for it every time you got a fourth down?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's more a case that they're a confident offense than they are confident in their defense.
I would tend to agree with that. I tend to agree
not
with that.
Not that the defense doesn't have its issues.
But in this last week in particular, I think they went for it on fourth down. Simply because, you know, number one, the field position was better. Number two, because I'm sure that they were confident they could get the play. Number three, because it kept the ball out of Drew Brees' hands a little bit longer, realizing that he was having an unbelievable night. It wasn't so much our defense sucks as I want to help our defense with all the advantages I can give it.
Absolutely. And why kick a field goal when you can get 7 points, which they eventually did? They went for it twice on fourth down on that one drive early in the game, and it paid off.
Right. Dagmar from Miami, right with us in the playbook. Hi, Dagmar.
Hey, how's it going, John?
Good, man. What's happening today?
Good, good. Let me say hello to Eric there, too.
Hey, buddy. What's going on?
You see the sky clear?
The sky's clear up here, yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, aren't any bombs falling yet?
No, no bombs. Nothing no yet. Bombs. How's it? What's the weather like down in Miami? What's it going to be like,
man,
for the Pats?
I haven't checked for the day, I mean the game day forecast, but so far right now is very, very nice. I mean, we got some clouds, temperature is really, really nice. I believe we are around the 70s, 80s probably today, but clear blue sky with some clouds sometimes, but really good, really good.
Digging it.
Typical South Florida weather.
Though. Digging it.
Yeah. You love it when you get down here because it hasn't rained these days. It was a little chilly during the weekend, but kind of got a little warmer now as the week got in progress. But I hope it's going to stay like that for game day.
Right.
I haven't been in contact with the TV that much because I've been doing homework assignment for school. And that's why I asked the doctors first if you were yesterday in the program or not, because I haven't been able to update myself with the addition of PFW progress from yesterday and from today. Quick question.
Go.
I know that we are all speaking on defense, of course, and what gives or what opens the door for that is that first drive that the Saints put up together on that last game.
Right.
I mean, obviously, it showed a lot of gaps on that defense, but on, I guess, on offense, I don't know if you have talked about already, because, like I said, I'm not updated with.
Yeah, that's right.
You say yes.
No, don't worry about it. Yeah, don't worry about it. Go ahead.
Why? I know they try to balance the offense, but if you know that the running game was working, why these Patriots offense or they're playing the plan for the game?
Why did they go away from it?
Yeah, it changed so much that
I think that's a very good question.
All of a sudden, it was shotgun, and I'm like, what?
Yeah, that's a legitimate question. Frankly, it's one I'm not sure, Eric, that we've really been able to answer much. Do you?
I think I was encouraged in the first half when they lost the lead and didn't panic and start throwing too much right away. They stuck with the running game in the first half. I was hoping that would carry over into the second half. It didn't. They got a little bit panicky in the second half and started throwing a lot more. I thought Maroney was having one of his best games that I've seen.
I was
surprised that I don't have a reason why. I mean, I guess they just thought that time was running out or whatever. But I thought if they stuck with the running game a little more, it might have helped keep the ball away from the Saints' offense. But they chose not to do that.
I don't know if you guys have already talked about it on BFW in Progress, because like I said, I haven't been able to listen to the podcast or even listen live because I've been busy. But just wanted to make sure that if I was going over something that you have already talked about.
I don't think we have a definitive answer to that. I mean, they altered the game plan, I think, slightly because the team got behind. They felt a sense of urgency. And, they just decided they couldn't control the clock anymore, that they had to go score. And they felt like their only chance to win the game was to perhaps, put up 38 points, which they didn't even get close to.
Yeah, another thing, I understand that why at some point you want to rely on your major weapons, which are, of course, Brady, Moss, Walker, and, the passing game in general. But, I saw a couple of plays called, I know that once you suit up for the game, you're eligible for, whatever play may be called on your team, either defense or offense, whatever you play. But going deep in the end zone to this new player that we just got on the team and just switched the number from 9 to 16.
Oh, Isaiah Stanback, the squad guy who was brought up.
I saw him going deep on one play to the right side of the right corner of the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, when I saw that ball and I knew he was running on that side of the field, I knew he was not going to cut that. Not for not giving credit to him, but, I don't know. I don't think it was. I know that once you suit up for the game, you have to be able to make the play, the call, whatever. But I don't know. In that specific call, I guess I felt like we gave that play away once you throw it to one guy like that on such a meaningful game. But anyway,
he's made catches. Yeah. They've thrown the ball to him plenty of times. He's shown he can catch the ball. I don't have any problem with throwing to him in the end zone. If he was the open guy, you throw to him. I think it was just a bad throw. It was an overthrow by Brady. If it was on the money, he would have caught it. It would have been a touchdown.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah, and you just now brought up my last point. You just mentioned it, Brady. I mean, if we have to call or mention not a good day for somebody, I think we have to bring up to the conversation Brady's performance. I mean, I haven't seen a game like that.
You're right. We have done that, Dagmar, and thanks for the call. Yeah, we did do that, and we called out Brady on it a little bit yesterday on the show, and we talked about how, what, he has to be held responsible. He has to be held responsible for this. He had a poor game. Mm-hmm. He did not have a good game. I don't think it was obviously solely Brady's fault.
No,
I think secondary can look at it. But, you know, here's the point that we have to get back to here, and there's probably some credence to it. At least I think that there is, and I think Eric disagreed with me a little bit yesterday. But the fact is that, you know, now that we're here in what week are we in? Week 12. I think overall, or week 13,
week 13,
because of the bye week as well, that Brady is still showing some signs of not being all the way back from 2 years ago. Now, I think that's natural. All you have to do is go talk to a guy like Carson Palmer and watch a guy like Carson Palmer to know that it takes, you know, a year, if not a little bit more, to be the guy that you once were. And in some instances, kids, I hate to tell you this, you may never be the guy that you once were after a devastating injury like that. I'm not saying that's going to happen to Tom. What I'm saying here is that you've got to realize that this takes time. And unless you've ever experienced a devastating injury like that to yourself, you have no idea what it takes to come back and be the player that you once were. And that your body, your mind says, I got to go this way. And your body physically can't catch up to what your mind is telling you to do. That's hard. Now, I'm not going to make excuses for him either. You know, he stepped in the pocket. It looked like he was able to sidestep and, you know, and do what he had to do. But there were a couple of bad throws, you know, that as he was falling away from some of the rush, he obviously put too much mustard on a couple of those passes, which, again, indicates to me he's overcompensating because he's not completely falling through and he's still afraid to put some pressure on the front leg. Now, that's just a matter of schematics. He may be falling back into some older habits that he had earlier this year. I don't know. I can't crawl inside the guy's head. So, you know, Tom says he's fine. Then if he's fine, if he says he's fine, I'm going to believe that he's truthful. Mm-hmm. But when push comes to shove and you got 300-pound guys breathing down your neck and one of them is right on your heel and you're going to sidestep, your tendency is going to be to want to get rid of the damn football anyway, isn't it?
No, how would you do it think? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, yes, does he deserve part of the blame? Absolutely. But, you know, I still think, though, all in all, we've seen better performances out of Tom over the last few weeks, and that there's no way that he's responsible solely. But when you combine the fact that he had a subpar game with the game that the secondary had, you're going to get a stinker.
Yeah.
And that's what you had.
It's just it's disappointing that not only was it, I mean, because you have to allow for a bad performance now and then.
Yes.
But it seems like their bad performances have come against the better teams in the league. And that's where it's troubling to me. I mean, if you have a, you know, you have a random bad game against a division opponent or, you know, a non-conference road game or whatever, it's just they've come against good teams. Mm-hmm. And they're not playing that many good teams in this regular season.
Right.
And it just, it's, I hope it's not a portent of what's going to happen in the playoffs.
I hope it's not either.
A what?
Portent. Premonition. An indication of something.
Do we need an English lesson for you now?
Well, he went to Syracuse.
I usually go with
that's true.
I usually go with precursor.
You would.
Yeah. That sounds like a Syracuse guy, doesn't it? Joshua from California says, John, new listener to the playbook. Wanted to say I love the show. Well, thank you, Joshua. I just wanted to say that after the loss to the Saints, I think the Patriots are pumped for this week's division game. They will beat the Dolphins 35-13.
I don't know if it'll be quite that large a margin.
Hey, but Joshua, from your mouth to God's ears, I suppose, but I'm not so sure it's going to be quite that wide. Gary, do you think the Pats will bring back Weiss this season?
No.
I know that Coach Bill said he has no plans at this time to bring him back, but does he say anything about anything? I feel that Bill is overworked and is in over his head. If he brings back Weiss, he could hand off the offense to him right away. It's
no,
not going to happen this
happen.
Season.
Not going to happen.
I think it could happen. Maybe they'll talk about it a little bit for the offseason, but not in the middle of the year, no.
No.
Well, I mean, we have a defensive end, and we got two tight ends, and we don't touch the mother.
I actually like that. That's
that
good.
Was pretty funny.
That was good. Play that again. I like that.
What was that from?
Well, I mean, we have a defensive end, and we got two tight ends, and we don't touch the mother.
Well,
what was that from?
His 60 Minutes interview when they had all those clips of him on the sideline and he was mic'd up for a game.
Oh, he was talking to one of his coaches in the booth. Is that what it was? Oh,
I was going to say, if that was a post-game interview, wow. No. I don't remember hearing that.
No, actually, that's the kind of talk, though, that the Patriots probably could use right about now.
Imagine that if you know, one of those little sideline reporters goes up to him after the game.
And that was the answer.
You go, oh, yeah. That would have been
hilarious. Well, believe me, when he was walking off the sidelines on NBC.
He was thinking it, probably.
Probably thinking it. And I'm sure that the censor at NBC was probably on the dump button.
Yeah.
Or was he thinking?
I want to kiss you.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah!
Compliment.
I don't care if the team is struggling.
I couldn't care less about the team struggling.
Yeah!
That makes me laugh every time I hear it.
Struggling.
I couldn't care less about the team struggling.
I think if you just played that on an endless reel, that people would still laugh. Nobody gets sick of that.
That gets annoying.
That gets annoying. But not
I want to kiss you.
But the struggling part, I would buy that. That's
yeah, don't expect Weiss to come back at this point. I mean, he just went through it just doesn't make any sense right now. You need a clear head. He just came off a season, a full college season. I'm sure he's spent emotionally from, you know, the fact that it didn't work out for him at Notre Dame. I think he expected to be there for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially he got the long extension. He wanted his son to go there. I think that was one of the things he mentioned when he got the extension, was that he felt, the burden of lifted of not having to worry about where his son was going to go to school, that his own alma mater and all that. You know, it's too emotional a ride to just pick up. And I mean, these people are human beings. It's not like that. I mean, you know, as much as they try in the media to project that they're, you know, above emotion and that kind of thing, it's an emotional game. And I'm sure he's not going to have any kind of frame of mind to go from that to this and be put in this microscope at the last part of the most important part of the season. He's going to be, it doesn't make any sense at all.
Adam in Huntersville, North Carolina says, I've heard so much complaining about the defense and how they're not as good as the past couple of years. If I'm not mistaken, in 06, the Chargers lit up the defense. In 07, the Giants stuck 35 to them. How about Halloween in 04? Steelers put 38 on, I think, and killed our 21-game win streak. I'm not jumping ship. I still expect at the least to have an AFC championship appearance.
Well, you're expecting a lot then.
Wow.
You're expecting a lot. I mean,
some serious confidence.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, his parallel, I think, is well taken, but, you know, I think those teams were just put together a little differently.
Yeah. I mean, you have to look at it. I mean, as much of a fan as you might be, you have to look at things objectively. They don't have the playmakers that they used to have on defense. They don't have a legitimate third wide receiver on offense. And this is a three wide receiver set offense. So a third wide receiver is basically a starter.
Mm.
There are some encouraging things here and there, but, you know, overall they have more issues than not. And they have more issues than they had when they were winning Super Bowls.
Right.
So objectively, when you look at it, I mean, to expect, what did he say? I don't expect anything less than an AFC championship?
That's what he says. Expect at least an AFC championship appearance.
You have to be a little bit realistic here. If they're going to have to play on the road one or two games in the playoffs, they might not even reach the AFC
championship. Yeah, I mean, honestly here, this is not, Adam, a team for some reason or another that can win on the road. I don't know why. They have always been able to win on the road in the past. For some reason this year, they're not able to. I frankly allude a good deal of that to less veteran presence, because the more veterans you have, the more that going on the road does not bother you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just something natural that this team is now going to have to grow into.
Yeah,
and
sure.
I think that's one thing that maybe GM Belichick, as we had this argument yesterday, didn't take into full consideration.
Maybe.
Because I think he takes, you know, that veteran presence and, you know, the fact that you have a veteran presence on the road, I think he took that for granted.
Yeah. Yeah, I see that.
Veteran teams win road games.
Yep.
Young teams do not. Name the sport, okay?
Yep.
It never happens. I'm going through it right now, you know, with my own basketball team that I cover in Providence College. They've played a couple of good tight road games, but they just haven't been, they've had chances to win in the end. What happens in the end? They can't hold it.
Right, right.
It's because they don't know how to do it.
Right.
They have to go through it to learn it. And a lot of these guys in this Patriots locker room, they're going to have to go through this, which they're doing now, to learn it.
Right.
They gacked it up at Indianapolis. They got their butts beat at New Orleans. The next opportunity is Sunday. Let's see how they let's see how much they've learned.
Right. Yeah, it's not impossible for them to turn it around in the last five games and and get that experience. But we're basing our comments on what we've seen thus far.
Correct.
And what we've seen thus
far. Yeah, we can't base our comments on something we haven't seen yet. No, because we don't know what's going to happen.
And what we've seen thus far is cause for concern.
John says, hey, John. I thought this was John. Alex from Georgia here. I was listening to your Wednesday podcast today, and I have this to comment about Junior. So we know that he was retired, and he hasn't played one snap on the field.
That's not accurate. No, he's played.
Yeah, I know he's played. That's right. He was retired. Hasn't played one snap on the field. Well, he did. He played the first 2 weeks he was here.
Right.
Said, why would they have taken a roster spot and signed Junior when he hasn't played? My point is, since he hasn't stepped on the field, why not bring him in as an assistant coach? That way you still have him to do his pep talk. Most importantly, you still have the roster spot for someone that contributed to the team on the field. Well,
yeah,
he has played.
He did play. And
first 2 weeks he was here,
right.
He played. He hasn't played since.
Right. He's taken the last few off as far as, I mean, he hasn't been in the game. He's been dressed and he's been active for every game. He just hasn't played. And I think it goes back to what he said when he signed, which was this body has six games in it. Okay, you played two. That leaves you four. Use him in an emergency when it counts down the stretch or in the playoffs.
Otherwise,
let him be. Get the most out of him that you can.
You signed him
in October and he only has six games. Well, naturally, you have to keep him out of a lot of other games if you want to keep him for the whole season.
I would agree.
And there's nothing more to do than with anything than with
that. Makes sense to me. Says it's been a frustrating season, and it started in the draft when they kept on trading down when there was obvious need that really wasn't addressed. I do like the trade of Seymour, unless, of course, the likely will happen and that pick will get traded down a couple of times. But I still have faith in the Patriots and Bill. This team has overcome a lot this decade. I'm hoping that this is something they can do this year as well. Alex, thank you for the email.
I hope so, too.
Sean, John, I have said before, no pass rush equals no win. The O-line and D-line are allegedly all pros, but yet the D-line gets no pressure on the quarterback. The O-line is shaky at best. Well, I don't think they're shaky. I just think that they've had lapses on occasion.
They're not all pro material all across the board.
But I don't think
they're not the worst in the league I've ever seen.
That's
right.
At least they're consistent.
Average to slightly above average offensive line.
I would agree with that assessment. I say they lose one more, go 11-5, make the playoffs, and then they're one and done. Hopefully, they get aggressive in free agency with linebackers this offseason. I'm not as down on the secondary as much as others are. If you give any halfway decent quarterback time to throw, he will connect with someone. I'll be at the game on Sunday, hoping for the best. Okay. This one comes from Todd in Jacksonville. John, you just made a comment that I've been hearing a lot lately about the Patriots. You were talking about what the Patriots have to do in order to have a chance to grab the number two seed. You stated that if they beat the Dolphins, all they have to do is sweep December, and historically the Patriots do very well in December. Well, I have a problem with this. Geez, funny, huh? As the Patriots team is nothing like past Patriots teams. When the Pats performed really well in December, they had Brady, who wasn't coming off a serious injury the year before. They had a veteran defense with years and years of experience that could ratchet up their play knowing they've been there and done that. This defense, especially the backfield, is totally new. Pats don't have a dominant pass rusher. There's no viable number three wide receiver or tight end. I disagree with that one. They do have a viable tight end. They just don't throw to him.
They haven't. They tried. They targeted him a lot in the Saints game. Well, four times, but that was more than they had targeted him recently. And when they got down in the red zone, they were trying to get him the ball.
And they were poor passes.
Yeah, that was four, Bill.
Eight.
Come on, Bill. So not to mention the linebacking core isn't near as good as years past. Where are the playmakers? Throw out the past Patriots teams and what they have done. They don't apply to this year's team. As for last year, December's schedule was ridiculously soft, save for Arizona, who played like the Pats in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Now, saying all of that, if the Pats can get healthy on the O-line and running back position will greatly improve the Pats' chances. Maroney has played great as of late, but the addition of Morris and Taylor will make the teams have to respect the run more and hopefully will let the wide receivers get open more often. The O-line needs to be able to pass protect better to allow Brady some time to find the open receiver and throw the ball to them accurately. As far as the D is concerned, I think they are what they are, average at best. The secondary continues to be a problem against the top-tier offenses. There's absolutely no pass rush other than Banta Kane. Think about that. Banta freaking Kane is our best pass rusher.
Yeah. Well,
it's a good email, actually.
Yeah. Well, I have to run upstairs.
So you're done?
I'm done.
We're sticking a fork in you?
Yeah.
Okay. When do you leave for Florida?
We leave Saturday.
We'll see you not really a chance to enjoy any of the sunshine, huh?
Not better really, because we'll get there in the evening, so the sun will have set, I think, and then it's a 1 o'clock game, so by the time we get up and have breakfast, it'll be time to go to the stadium.
No South Beach trip? Saturday night. Saturday night.
We're kind of, we don't really stay close to South Beach.
That's
so
too bad.
I think for obvious reasons.
Drink.
Take a cab.
We're going
to
go drink.
Sorry, Paul. I don't think we're close enough to go do that.
Take a cab. Club Mangoes.
Oh, I've been to South Beach. It's great. If we were close.
You've been into Club Mangoes?
I don't remember.
Oh, dude, you'd remember if you've been there.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think Mangoes is referring to?
The servers, they get up on the bar and dance.
Oh.
And it's unbelievable. Just go.
I'll look into it.
It's got a nice clientele there, too.
Okay. Very good.
All right, baby.
All right, well, we'll talk on Wednesday next week because I'm off on Tuesdays.
Correct. Yes.
All right.
Adios.
See you then.
All right. Hour number two of the playbook. Russell Baxter, ESPN, coming up.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines, back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Back inside the playbook, hour number two here on American Airlines, Patriots.com radio. And we welcome into the playbook Russell Baxter.
Baxter.
ESPN's NFL research coordinator. Russell, I hope you had a good holiday.
Oh, I very much. Wait a minute. Is this John?
On a Thursday. I know.
Oh, my goodness. I don't think I've talked to you since Super Bowl 10.
Okay. All right. I get it. I deserve that.
Going back to the 40s. I was kidding Chris and Eric. I mean, you know, it's Joan River syndrome. You know, she did the show more than Johnny Carson did the last couple of years, I think.
Right.
You know? But it's you, so.
Yes. Actually,
he shows his commitment to us very well, doesn't he, Russell?
Well, all right, come on.
Committed is a word I've always associated with John.
Yes. Thank you. That's an accurate. Yes, that is an accurate assessment. I was working for the Worldwide Leaders family last night. I had an ESPN regional game. I had BU UConn last night.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So, you know.
You have become the well-traveled John Rook.
I'm trying. You know. Some people say traveled enough, that's for sure.
Hey, versatility is the key in our business.
Hey, listen, you have to be versatile. If you're not, you're not going to be in the business very
that's
long.
True. You'll have a lack of versatility. Let's put it that way.
Precisely.
Yeah. Ryan used to say to his players when he was the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, you can take a 60% pay cut or you can take a 100% pay cut.
Yeah, and there's a lot
it's
of truth
to
that. Yeah, it's really. It's kind of all up to you. Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, so I remember last week when we spoke on Tuesday before the holiday came around that you thought, and I thought too, I have to admit, I'm right there with you, that there was a chance that both of the undefeateds, last week at 10-0, might lose. And obviously we know now that that did not necessarily happen, and that for the first time, whatever, in the NFL, we actually have two teams 11-0 at the same time. So where did we go wrong with that particular thought process?
Well, I don't think the thought process was wrong. It's just the teams that we were talking about didn't cooperate. But, you know, yeah, I mean, when we last talked, they were 9-0, and now they've added twice.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just in different ways of going about it. And, you know, the Colts, you know, just keep on rallying in the fourth quarter. And the Saints, you know, what can you say about them last Monday night? An absolutely dominating performance over the Patriots. So different strokes for different folks. And they're getting it done. And there's something in the back of my mind. I don't know if it's going to happen, but would it not be fun if they were both 18-0 and somehow met in the Super Bowl?
Well, I have to admit, there would be a buzz around that game probably like few others.
Well, no doubt about it. And, you know, there's been, you know, as you hear, let's put it this way. There'll be no talk of can a team go undefeated if two are 18-0 going in there, because obviously one of them is going to, unless mm-hmm. I don't think you're allowed to play for a tie in the Super Bowl. Let me check my rules records here.
No, it doesn't look like it.
No, but I mean, could you imagine just how amazingly astounding that would be in the interest level? You know, two of the finest quarterbacks in the league right now, Drew Brees and Peyton Manning. Again, but there is an awful long way to go, and who knows? Maybe neither one of them get there
mm-hmm.
after this tremendous start. I mean, usually when you get off to these tremendous starts, it's usually a better than average chance you're going to get there. But then again, we saw Tennessee get up to 10-0 and slide down the stretch, and they're now just recovering from last year's slide.
That's also true.
Yeah.
That's also true. And, of course, obviously, a couple of years ago, the Patriots got all the way to, mm-hmm. you know, as far as they did. And then we won't mention it anymore beyond that, because everybody here knows ad nauseum what happened. It just didn't happen at the end. It's so hard to maintain. And yet it's an intriguing story that we'll continue to follow every week. And more so for the Colts, because now they have a chance to they have a chance to match the Patriots record of 21 straight.
Yeah. And, for the Colts, this has to kind of come, I don't want to say old hat, but I mean, let's go back. 2005, they were 13-0. 2006, they were 9-0. 2007, they were 7-0 and lost. The Patriots handed them their first loss. Now here we are, 11-0 for the second time
mm-hmm.
in 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they've really made this undefeated talk vogue for them. But they always seem to handle it different ways, and a lot of times not necessarily great. You know, with all those starts that we mentioned, they've only won the one Super Bowl over that span. So they're better equipped to handle it, per se. I mean, the Saints are in uncharted territory. They had never been 8-0 in their history, much less 11-0. It all depends on how you handle it. I think the thing you can't do, and I think the mistakes that have been made in the past, is shut it down for a couple of weeks. I think you still have to play. I'm not saying you have to play all your guys, but I think you have to rest the guys who are nicked. You've got to find a way to find a balance. Like Mr. Miyagi once said in The Karate Kid, you got to find the balance of not underplaying and not overplaying. And I know that's easier said than done, but you know what's funny? If two teams happen to – say two teams get – say they're at both 14-0, okay? Again, that's 3 weeks away. That's a long way away, okay?
Yep.
The pressure is not really on – who's the pressure really on? Is it on the Colts or is it on the Saints to go undefeated?
Hmm.
You know, it's actually – it's almost, you know – I don't know how you would describe it. I mean, you already said it, John. We're in unprecedented territory here.
Right. We don't really know. Yeah, that's true.
You know, so who would the pressure be on? Would it be on the Colts or would it be on the Saints? Would it be on neither or would it be on both? I mean, I think that would be – incredibly intriguing.
The pressure's on you to come up with another Mr. Miyagi reference before we're done here. All right?
By the end of the show, I promise you I will.
I love it.
That'll be a stretch, but did you know Hilary Swank played in the fourth Karate Kid movie?
Yes, I remember that. I actually do remember that. That is correct.
Yes, I mean, Hilary Swank, the fourth Karate Kid movie, and it obviously served her well. She won 2 Oscars.
Yeah, I'm a big Hilary Swank fan. I think she's
yeah, so my,
she's
well, I mean, she, listen, Million Dollar Baby has got as good a movie in the last 10 years as there's been.
I agree. I happen to agree with that. Do we take any solace in the fact that the Patriots, when they played the Saints last week, and I saw this in one of the NFL notes this week as I'm going through the stuff, that the Patriots' schedule, as it has been thus far, It's only the fifth time since 1970 that a team has played two games against teams with records of 8-0 or better in the same season. Now, the Patriots also played earlier five straight weeks to start the season against undefeated teams. So that's, what, seven times this year now that they played?
Seven times in 11 games.
Yeah, that they've played a team that was unbeaten. Do we take anything out of that?
Well, I think what you take out of it is it's obviously, I think it's some quirky scheduling, as it turns out. And, you know, just like, remember, the Redskins played their first six games of the year against teams that hadn't won a game.
Yeah.
Okay? But here's – if I'm New England, I'm probably a little concerned. Listen, I don't think there's any question that there's concern over the Patriots' defense. There's no doubt about it. Here's an interesting number for you. And, again, I'm talking about two of the better quarterbacks in the league. Mm-hmm. But against Peyton Manning and Drew Brees, the Patriots gave up 9 touchdown passes.
Okay.
In two games.
Right.
In the other 9 games they played against the rest of the league, to quarterbacks, they gave up 9 touchdown passes.
Ooh.
Now, Ronnie Brown threw one against them, when they played Miami the first time. But against opposing the other quarterbacks, the Mark Sanchez's, the Kyle Ortons, the Flacco and Ryan and Josh Johnson, then it was Josh, you know, Freeman in the game in London. So the better quarterbacks, I'm not going to say the two best quarterbacks because let's not forget about Tom Brady. But two of the better quarterbacks really lit them up. And, that's also, 73 points in those two games as well. We knew this was going to be a rebuilding Patriots defense. I mean, you don't lose the guys via retirement, and you also don't trade the guys the way that they traded.
But they didn't seem to be as – I'm sorry to interrupt, but they didn't seem to us to be as bad as what they showed on Monday.
Oh, but do you think it's bad or do you think it's lack of experience?
It's probably a little of both.
Yeah, I think it's a little of both. And listen, people, even though they have not won the Super Bowl the last 4 years, when you game plan around this league, you know how it is when somebody new comes in the league. You remember in 1998, I'll go back a little bit, 1998 when Randy Moss and that offense came in the league, everybody, even though they didn't win the Super Bowl, everybody geared to focus on how to stop that Minnesota offense. 2 years ago when the Patriots scored 589 points, I know they didn't win the Super Bowl. They came up a bit short. You mm-hmm. think people didn't go into that offseason and say, how are we going to defend against the New England Patriots?
Mm-hmm.
Of course they did. And I think because they have been the bully on the block for this decade, and in my mind, the team of the decade, people put a little extra emphasis into seeing what they have and what they don't have. And defensively, and maybe this is why Bill Belichick on the fourth down a couple weeks ago, his fear was against stopping anyone. And, you know, the proof is in the pudding. They have not played well in the two games against, two 11-0 teams. I understand that. But the two seasoned veteran quarterbacks that they have faced have really, really taken advantage of them. But I don't want to skip something here from the game Monday night. Because I think the thing that impressed me even more than Drew Brees was the way the Saints secondary really did.
I mean that
Wes
was,
Welker and Randy Moss were
with a couple of street free agents too. I mean, come on.
Right, Chris McAllister, Mike McKenzie, but 9 catches for 99 yards between the two of them. As you well know, Devery Henderson and Marcus Colson both had over 100 yards receiving.
Yeah,
and they really kind of knocked them around a little. I didn't think the Saints got tremendous pressure on Brady. But I think they got their share of coverage sacks. I mean, and they didn't sack Brady a lot, but a lot of it was, I think, was deemed on coverage. And I'm not sure exactly what Greg Williams was doing and so on, because, you know, we obviously don't have the film, what we call the high 22, to see what was going on back there. But, you know, Wes Welker, 6 for 32. I mean, that number is even more staggering than the Randy Moss number, which was 3 catches for 67 yards. Got most of it mm-hmm. on that long bomb. And so on. But you could almost sense that you could see why Bill Belichick on the opening drive, twice on fourth down, went for it.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that was astounding is, and look at the numbers, John, the Patriots won time of possession. They had the ball for more than 33 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the Saints were still able offensively to put 38 points on the board against them.
It's a little scary.
Yeah, it was it was a mile. I don't want to say it was a statement win. I mean, we use that a lot. But in the case of the Saints, who have not been a statement franchise, that was a statement win for them. And if anybody has any doubts, doubt no more. And I don't know what the Saints are going to do the rest of the year. But that was a really, really impressive performance Monday night.
Sure was. All right, we'll turn our schedule then to this week, and there's actually got another Thursday night game that would hold some interest to Patriots fans tonight as the Jets play at the Bills. The Jets still alive and breathing in the playoff chase after a win last week over Carolina. The Bills did the Patriots, I think, a favor by knocking off, surprisingly, knocking off by 17 points the Dolphins last week. So this one being played in Toronto tonight, one of those games that they've moved north of the border. So I'm having a hard time really getting a handle on this one, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back to when they played earlier this year, Mark Sanchez threw 5 interceptions and really wasted. You remember, the Jets ran for over 300 yards in that first meeting this year, John, and lost the game. Mark Sanchez really had his problems. I can't see him throwing 5 interceptions, and I'm not going to say he's going to throw 6. But Buffalo's run defense is substandard. You know, playing these games up in Toronto doesn't really give them a home field advantage.
No.
To me, it's almost kind of a neutral site game, and the weather is neutralized because I believe the game is indoors. So I kind of lean toward the Jets, and could it be 16-13 in overtime as well? I think the Jets will do a little better than that. I will say this, though. Ryan Fitzpatrick and Terrell Owens have really kind of gotten their act together in terms of the long ball the last couple weeks, and Darrell Revis does a really good job on shutting down people. But I get the feeling T.O. will get loose at least once, but I don't think that'll make a difference. I kind of lean toward the Jets.
Okay. Yeah, I would kind of do too. But nevertheless, if Buffalo were to somehow win that game, you wouldn't have too many people with crying around here. I'm rather certain of that.
Buffalo would win the game. I also wouldn't be shocked. I mean, listen, the Bills were 0-4 in the division last year, and they have beaten Miami, and they have beaten the Jets this year, so they've made strides in terms of that. And it's another, unfortunately, Leonard, non-playoff year likely for the Bills,
which
it's been a long time. They haven't been in a playoff game since losing the Music City Miracle, and that's a long time ago.
That is a long time ago.
And they've already fired their head coach this year.
Yep, that's true.
You know, the Bills and the Lions currently own the longest playoff droughts in the league. I mean, anytime you say something in conjunction with the Lions these days, not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah. The one game I think that certainly bears some intrigue here, even though one of the teams technically has a losing record, is the Titans playing at the Colts this weekend. Not only for the fact that the Colts can, tie the Patriots' mark of 21 straight wins, but Titans have won 5 in a row since Vince Young became the quarterback again and have unbelievably turned around a season. It's almost inexplicable what they've done. And so the big question is this something they can sustain even though they got to play on the road?
Well, it's funny. People forget that 3 years ago they dug themselves a similar hole. They were 0-5 and went into the final game of the season against New England with an outside shot at getting in the playoffs. I'm sure you remember that. They were 8-7 after being 0-5.
That's right.
And of course, they lost to the Patriots in Nashville and didn't make the playoffs. So, this is not uncharted territory for him, but the hole is even bigger. Now, only one 0-4 team has ever made the playoffs. That was the 92 Chargers. So, obviously, an 0-5 or an 0-6 has never made it. But they're playing with confidence. They're playing well. I thought Vince Young's performance in the final, it was funny, as bad as the mistake he made letting the clock run out at the end of the first half last week against Arizona was as good as he played on the 99-yard drive in which he converted, count them, 3 fourth downs with his arm, not his feet. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. Listen, there's still going to be naysayers, and I'm not ready to put Vince Young in the Hall of Fame like I know he wants to be there one day. But I'll say this. If you've looked at them the last 2 weeks against Houston and against Arizona, if you don't see a difference in the way he handles himself, the way he handles himself in the pocket, the less scattered approach, the more maturity, more calm, then you're not looking on purpose.
Right, you're not paying attention.
He's a different quarterback. There's no doubt about it. And who knows, John, we all grow up at different times. Me, I'm still waiting. Okay.
At least you admit it.
As a football player, we don't know. Am I saying he's all the way back? I'm not sure of that either. I just know even from 3 years ago, when it was mostly legs and about 50% passing, this is a different guy than I saw when he was a rookie. And can they come back? Can they win this game? Sure they can, because they got a running back right now. How's this for a number?
Go.
928 yards rushing in his last six games.
Oof.
Keep That's in mind impressive. That the Colts themselves have run for 964 all season.
Wow. Wow.
Okay, and this guy is threatening Eric Dickerson's record, as we well know, looking to become maybe the sixth guy to rush for 2,000 yards in a season. They played now. Remember, they played earlier this year, and you know, the Colts handled them pretty good. They actually held Tennessee to 90 yards rushing. Again, different football team right now. I'm going to be done picking against the Colts until actually they do lose, because I think it's very vogue to go, well, this is the week, this is the week, this is the week.
Yeah.
But the way the Colts are playing and the way Vince Young is playing, are we going to at least be surprised that it's not 24-20 Indianapolis with 3 minutes to go and Vince Young and the Titans have the ball?
Wouldn't be surprised at all.
No.
Wouldn't be surprised at all. There's another game that has a lot of intrigue and certainly would have a bearing perhaps on the Patriots and maybe even their own playoff chances when the Texans are playing at the Jaguars. Both of the teams, in fact, Eric and I were talking about this earlier, Russell, there are technically now seven teams within one game of each other playing for the sixth and final playoff spot in the AFC, and these are two of them.
Yes, and, you know, it's going to be hard to flip a coin when it comes to trying to figure out who wins this game, because you have to flip a coin on both of these teams every week. You never, honestly, John, which one of these teams ever shows up. You never know. I mean, Jacksonville, three-game winning streak, look like they're getting their act together. They go out and, frankly, lay an egg at San Francisco. They can't even get in the end zone. They're held to a field goal. Garrard is sacked six times. Last week, for the second year in a row, the Texans had a 17-point lead over the Colts at home, and at one time fell behind by 15.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. They lost by 8, but there was a 32-point swing in that game. And, you know, the Texans have really crippled themselves as far as the playoffs the last couple of weeks, losing to the Colts twice. It was their fourth game in a row against the division. They've lost three. So they've really put themselves behind the eight ball. I'm leaning toward Houston because I think they're a little more reliable than Jacksonville is. They're a little – you know, it's funny. Houston's a little more streaky, and Jacksonville's a little more unreliable. So I'm going to take the streak over the unreliable and leaning toward Houston. But, you know, both of these teams are, I think, staring at 7-9 or 8-8 at the best.
Really? So yeah. You don't think, you know, of course, the Patriots have both of these teams still to play on the schedule. Mm-hmm. And it's entirely possible, if not probable, that when the Patriots face them, either one or both could be playing for their playoff lives.
Oh, there's no bad about it. I believe the Houston game is at Houston week 17.
The last week of the season, correct.
And let's not also forget, not to bring up bad memories, Houston's defense has played a lot better this year because they signed a kid named Bernard Pollard in their secondary.
Mm.
And Patriots fans, Bernard Pollard is, what, about 17 letters, something like that?
Yeah.
16? It's a four-letter word in New England. I'm very aware of that. So.
Okay, as long as you recognize that.
Yeah.
One in the NFC to look at, Cowboys playing at the Giants. And, of course, I will ask the definitive question I think that a lot of people are asking of the Giants. What the heck's going on?
Well, it's funny. You know, we kind of kid around here doing our show on Sunday Countdown.
Yeah.
And when a team starts to slump, we'll say, what's wrong with the Giants?
What's going
what's
on?
What's wrong with the Cowboys? What's wrong with the Steelers? And I amended that last week by not saying what's wrong, but what happened?
Yeah.
That effort by the New York Giants on Thanksgiving night
was
Denver
awful. It was horrific.
Perplexing. Flat, lackadaisical. I mean, this is the team we talk about. We've talked about for 2 years, maybe having the best combination of offensive and defensive line in the league. They can't run the ball right now, and they can't pressure the passer. They have 9 sacks, I think, in their last 6 games, I believe.
Mm.
There's no pass
more than
rush.
The Patriots have.
Right. Brandon Jacobs is running sideways instead of forward. I mean, this is not the team we know as the New York Giants. And I'm not sure what's going on. I know they've had injuries and so on, but there's no fire in their belly. And their only saving grace right now is the fact that they did beat the Cowboys in Dallas back in week 2. Boy, that seems like an awful long time ago.
Right.
That's their only saving grace right now. Because if they can somehow sweep the Cowboys, it at least puts them in, you know, somewhat in the race. But they lose this game, they can kiss the division goodbye as far as I'm concerned. And that division race will come down to Philadelphia and Dallas, maybe, when they play, ironically, the last game of the year in Dallas.
Yeah, yeah. So. I tend to agree with that one. Along those lines, there's another intriguing game in the NFC where the Vikings are playing at the Cardinals. Now, provided that Kurt Warner is physically able to play, I'd actually give the Cardinals a shot in this game, but this is one that I'm not able to get a good look at simply because I just don't know, and I'm not entirely certain that I'm just 100% behind the Vikings. I think they still have to show me a little bit. What about you?
Yeah, I don't think it's a matter of showing. I think it's just a matter of playing a very good team. I think Arizona showed they did not have Kurt Warner last week. Matt Leinart has been very much maligned. Yet I thought he played very well at Tennessee. Their special teams, I mean, Lerod Stevens-Howling, the rookie from Pitt, if any guy was ever going to get special teams player of the week in this league, which he did for the NFC, guy returned a kickoff for a touchdown and down two balls in the one-yard line. I mean, that's as good as it gets. I thought they played very, very savvy football last week, even though it came apart, and I think they got beat by a great performance.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily that played poorly and so on. They're more than capable of winning this game. I think Minnesota is still a team that you can throw the football on. They have, listen, since they lost to Pittsburgh, they've won their last four games, 136-55. So they have taken no prisoners. And I'm still trying to get over the fact that Brett Favre has thrown 24 touchdown passes and three picks all year. His last game with the Jets, he threw three picks.
Amazing. Isn't it just amazing?
I mean, that's quite a turnaround. Listen, but Kurt Warner's been equally as impressive this year, and I know he's coming off not playing last week. Can you run on the Vikings? Oftentimes it's difficult. You bounce outside on them sometimes, but I don't know how often Minnesota gets to see a receiving trio like you do with Breston and Fitzgerald, et cetera, Bolden. I think Minnesota's a better team. I think they're playing good football, but I'm leaning toward Arizona in this one as well.
The Monday night game, your Monday night game, Ravens at the Packers. Packers probably could do the entire AFC a favor if they go ahead and knock off the Ravens in this one, I think.
Yeah, that would make it easy for all of us who have to figure out playoff tiebreakers and so on. So why do you get the feeling it won't happen?
Yeah, but, I get that feeling exactly.
But let's give credit too. Listen, for the second year in a row, Aaron Rodgers is having a phenomenal year, and they're starting to play their best football of the season right now. They're doing a slightly better job of protecting him. They're doing a much better job of running the football. And Charles Woodson has had a – you could throw him up there in the mix for defensive player of the year along with Jared Allen and so on. I think it's a very, very big game for Green Bay. I mean, Baltimore, of course, won last week, beating Pittsburgh in overtime. But I think the Packers at home on a Monday night, I think last week we said that was a statement game for New Orleans. I don't want to say this is a statement game, but I think the Packers, under this new regime with Rodgers, need to prove that they can get on a little bit of a roll. I think it's very important that they close the deal and be a playoff team this year. You know, they can win three of their last five games and finish 10-6 and get in as a wild card, because obviously I don't think they're going to catch the Vikings in the division. They're, in essence, they're four games behind them with five to play.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a very important game for Aaron Rodgers and the current Packers, and I'm leaning toward them.
And then that brings us back to the Pats at the Dolphins, the Sunday afternoon game being played in Miami, and the Buffalo Bills somehow did the Patriots and maybe even the other contenders in the AFC a big favor by shocking everybody last week and knocking off Miami in a big way. Question is, we're not real sure, I guess, what kind of Patriots team is going to show up, and it's another road game opportunity for a team that just hasn't played well on the road.
Yeah, and kind of, I don't want to say a curveball, but as you well know, this was supposed to be the Sunday night game.
Yep.
And this game got moved up to 1 o'clock.
Right.
Now, I don't think that's going to upset the apple cart that much, but it's a little bit of a change. It's short week and a little shorter week going on the road and so on. The thing that's interesting is Miami has obviously given New England problems with that Wildcat attack. There's no doubt about it. Even in the games they've lost the last two, they've moved the ball against them. But I think the way to beat New England right now is to throw the ball. We talked about these, you know, Manning and Breeze throwing the ball on them. I don't think the Dolphins have the passing attack and certainly not the receivers to do that. So I think New England finds a way to get this done, but I think it's going to be a high-scoring game, to be honest with you, John. I could see a 31-24 New England victory because I'm not sure. You got very young corners at Miami. The only thing, now I will say this, Patriots have given about 16 sacks all season.
Right.
Pretty good. The Dolphins have 14 sacks in their last three games. They're tied for second in the league right now with 35. So their pass rush is pretty potent, and, you know, I don't know what this means. Jason Taylor, Joey Porter, between the two of them in their career, 216.5 sacks. They're the two active leaders. Now, do they have a ton this year? I think Porter has 7. I think Taylor has 6. Them coming from those outside linebacker spots. Again, if they sack Brady 6 or 7 times, then Miami wins the game. But I don't know if Miami has the kind of offense, style-wise, that can keep up with New England, and that's why I'm kind of leaning toward New England, like I said, like 31-24.
We should probably interject, of course, that Joey Porter had the goose egg against the Patriots last time around, and the fact that the scoreboard here even indicated as such, which may have gone...
0.00.
It may have not gone completely unnoticed by Joey and or anybody on that Miami sideline.
Well, yeah, and listen, I will say this, though. Sneezing fires Joey Porter up. So I don't know if you have to necessarily put anything on me. I mean, he's going to come out and say what he has to say no matter what he has to do. But listen, Joey Porter, Jason Taylor, if they can keep, if the Patriots can keep them at bay and, you know, maybe Tom Brady finds Moss and Welker a lot more than they did last week. I just think the versatility of New England's offense is going to be, like I said, a little too much. And I don't think Miami – and I think Miami will run the ball in New England. I don't think there's any question about it. But I don't think they'll be able to throw the ball when they need to. Throwing when you want to and throwing when you need to is two totally different things.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of think that'll be the difference.
Russell, as always, we thank you for the time. Have a great weekend watching some football. And we will, believe it or not, I'll be here. We'll chat next week.
Liar.
You're welcome, Daniel-san.
You got it. Thanks. Russell Baxter, ESPN's NFL Research Coordinator, joining us here inside the playbook. We'll get to a timeout. Your email still welcome at webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482, here in the playbook.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. Says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited, but only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Man, it's football season. I mean, usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got razor-sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game. I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
Right. So, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
The Patriots.
Patriots are celebrating their 50th anniversary, and you can too at the Patriots Pro Shop. The Patriots Pro Shop is the place to find all the official 50th season merchandise. Everything from the 1963 jerseys the players are wearing this season to polos, sweatshirts, and hats featuring the original Pat Patriot logo. The Patriots Pro Shop has the widest selection of Patriots merchandise, including many 50th season items that you won't find anywhere else. Located next to Gillette Stadium at Patriot Place, the Patriots Pro Shop is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. or 24 hours a day at PatriotsProShop.com. And if you order from PatriotsProShop.com, we'll ship your order for just $5. You'll know it's authentic when you order from PatriotsProShop.com because your item is being shipped from Gillette Stadium. Celebrate 50 years of Patriots football at the Patriots Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
All right, back inside the playbook as we round third, head for home. Tomorrow, baseball terminology here on a football show. Pats and the Dolphins, of course, 1 o'clock in Miami. Patriots on the road for a second straight game, third time in the last 4 weeks. One of the tougher stretches of the season, as we've talked about, of course. Patriots won the first game of the series, 27-17 this year, last month here at Gillette Stadium. And they'll be looking for what would be their seventh sweep of the Dolphins in the series overall. Beginning in December of 2003, the Patriots are 24-2. 24-2 in December. That's the league's best record in December.
Wow!
Best record in December over that time span. Probably by a little bit. Patriots have won 12 straight December games, dating back to 2006. The Patriots have had undefeated Decembers in 01, 03, 05, 07, and last year, 08. 42-12 regular season record in the AFC East. Games in this division since the beginning of the 2001 season. That's the best intra-division record of any team in the NFL over the last 8 years. So looking at those numbers, as we always like to go inside the numbers there with Russell, but those are some of the numbers that we didn't really even get a chance to get into. Certainly it stacks up in the Patriots' favor, except for the fact that, A, I think we all know this has been a miserable team on the road this year, and, B, Miami is traditionally a tougher place for this team to play. Do we need to go back and look at some of the revisionist history there? The record in Miami at Dolphins / pro player / Joe Robbie / what is it now? Landshark Stadium. Overall, 11-32. That also counts the Orange Bowl, the old Orange Bowl, where they obviously played before Joe Robbie Stadium was built, which is now Landshark Stadium. 11 wins, 32 losses, and includes 1-1 in the playoffs. Belichick in Miami, 11 wins, 10 losses overall. He's 11-8 with New England, but overall he's 11-10. This is the 89th time in their 44-year history as division foes that they will have squared off. The Patriots have won 11 of the last 16 overall against Miami, as the Pats have held the upper hand here in Foxborough. As I mentioned to you, it's been a different story in South Florida. 11 wins and 43 chances over the years. That doesn't really inspire a lot of confidence, does it? The overall series belongs to Miami, 49 wins to 39 wins. So that's where the Pats and the Dolphins line up for Sunday in terms of the numbers that, you know, may or may not mean anything to you. But the fact is that this team has had a tough time playing in South Florida. It just always worked out that way. The overall divisional dominance by the Patriots certainly has to be looked at as a potential factor in the game. I think largely because it shows to me the ability of this team to persevere. and the ability of this team to get up and play and to, as Belichick suggested immediately after the game last week or Monday, that this team has a great ability to be able to put, you know, the last games behind it, especially when they haven't gone well. And they've done a pretty good job with that overall. And it looks like they're going to have to try to do that again in this point in time. By the way, the Patriots' longest win streak over the Dolphins was seven straight in a three-season span between 1986 and 1988. That was their longest streak. So, you know, not that they're getting close to that. Obviously, they don't have a consecutive number of wins here. But the seventh time that they're getting ready to sweep the Dolphins, considering the Dolphins have swept them 13 times previously, the Patriots still have a ways to go. Longtime Patriots fans will probably realize that over the years, Miami has done more than their fair share of whooping up on the Patriots. That has been the history. And so if you are a longtime Patriots fan, then you probably remember how painful it has been for this team to go down and play in South Florida. Now, nobody on this team has that experience, that relevance experience with them. Why they continue to have trouble playing down there through the years is just one of the great, you know, mystical anomalies, I think, in pro football or in sports in general. Don't know why some teams have trouble playing certain teams. They just do. Maybe it has something to do with the fact that you're traveling, you're playing down in South Florida when typically the weather is already cold and turning for the worse up here. Who knows what it is? But yet, you know, the good part about all this is that they have an opportunity now to, play themselves into a little bit better feeling, not only about themselves, but, you know, let Patriots Nation also feel a little bit better about themselves. Number one, by winning a game on the road. Number two, by vanquishing, perhaps, the Dolphins for the rest of this season, putting a little more distance between themselves and whomever in the division, staying undefeated in the month of December, and getting one step closer to doing what they need to do, even though it's an outside shot at best, into trying getting that two seed in the AFC and potentially, a home field advantage. You know, save for a potential championship game, perhaps, but still an opening round bye in the playoffs. And I think that, right now, more than anything else, is a worthwhile, worthy goal for this team to shoot for. I mean, think about it. As bad as it was on Monday, and we can all agree, it was bad. It was not good. Nothing good about it. They still have a good amount to play for. All of their goals ultimately still in front of them, unless, of course, their goal was the number one seed, I think, in the AFC. But I don't think anybody would tell you that that is a significant goal. Usually, when you talk to players, their goal is first and foremost to win the game in front of them, B, to win the division, C, to win in the playoffs, and then D, to get to the Super Bowl. Not win it, get to it. And they have all of these goals still out in front of them. Nobody says, hey, our goal is to be the number one seed. Nah, that's malarkey. They don't think like that. Never have, never will. Mike sends this note from Erie. He says, I don't know if you've read this. I was out of the office. Maybe the reason McKenzie covered Moss so well is because he played for the Packers when Moss played for the Vikings. You know, I would allow there might be something to the familiarity. But let's face it, until, a week or so ago, Mike McKenzie had been out of the game for a year. A year. Well, Randy Moss has been training and playing. Now, I'm not saying that McKenzie didn't work out, but I mean, that was an extraordinary performance by McKenzie, number one, and by the Saints secondary, number two, and an uninspiring performance by the Patriots offense, not only with the execution, but with the play calling. Uninspiring. I heard this today earlier on EEI, and I think it's actually a very good point. Dale Arnold made it, not that he doesn't make good points, but I think actually it makes a lot of sense to me. And the fact is that if you've noticed, if you've actually taken a good close look at things.
Stop!
No, I'm not going to stop, Dale. Not going to stop.
Nice package, Bear.
What the hell is that? That's Vermont
Teddy Bear. How about this?
Rohan Davey, pass complete to number 81, Bethel Johnson. And that's enough yardage for another New England Patriots
That's funny. When the hell was that? Rohan Davey. Did he fill in for me one game?
If he did, it was before my time.
That's funny. Oh, goodness. No, I lost my train of thought. Let it go. It gave me a good laugh, though. What the hell was I saying?
You heard something from Dale on EEI found interesting.
Thank you. God, my mind is absolutely gone here. Not that that's unusual.
Because this is usually a travel day.
That's probably also true for me. No, what I heard him say was that when the Patriots line up in the I formation, when they line up in the I formation, have they passed out of the I formation yet this year? And when Dale asked that question on the air, I said, no, I don't think they have. And I said that to myself. I'm sitting in my car, you know, driving, and said it to nobody but me. But I said, that's actually a good point. What it does is it lends to the predictability of the Patriots on offense. Have they ever thrown the ball out of the stinking I formation? When they've had, you know, Sammy Morris in there against the Saints, I noticed a couple of times they've even had, you know, Law Firm in there running at fullback. They've done it with Ben Watson, you know, lined up in that fullback slot. They've done it several times. But they've always done what? They've always run the ball out of the I. Could we maybe come up with another play call? They're too predictable. To me, that more than anything is why, you know, a guy like Moss, you know, and a guy like Welker and some of the others had a struggle of a time against the Saints team that should have been whipped, just like the Patriots secondary was whipped on Monday. They're too predictable. Yikes. Yikes. Matthew says, did you hear the sirens in the background during Dagmar's call? Yes, I did. I thought the cops were going to bust in on Dagmar in mid-call to a Patriots web radio show. God knows what kind of racket Dagmar has going on down there. Well, that call was Dagmar-esque on a few different levels today. He says, that show of yours kills me. Thank you. Hey, he's a good guy. He's a Patriots fan. Lay off of Dagmar, will you? Chris is next in Seattle. He says, glad you're remembering the Jacksonville game and its possible significance. I'm flying in from Seattle for the holidays and will be at the game against Jacksonville. All right, Chris, good deal. I feel we have this team's number in the playoffs and otherwise, but I selfishly like to think that this will be a meaningful game when I see it. It absolutely could be. It'll probably be more meaningful if you see Jacksonville win this weekend against Houston, as Russell and I just talked about a little while ago, Chris. One or the other of those two games, either against the Jags here or on the road in the season finale at Houston, and what is that, January 3rd, one of those two games is going to have meaningful significance for the Patriots. Probably not both, but one of them will. And so while I'm thinking that this is probably still the biggest pitfall that they have left ahead of them this Sunday at Miami, and largely it's because it's on the road, one of those two games is going to qualify as the next best pitfall, potential pitfall. And it will have everything to do with the fact that the other team, the opponent, will have an opportunity to, you know, solidify themselves in the playoff derby. And that a lot of that could be determined by this week's game against each other. Now, if Houston wins that game and maybe go 6-6 and Jacksonville drops to 6-6, you know what? It's conceivable both of those games could mean something, but I think that you've got a pretty good shot at the Jacksonville game meaning at least a little something, certainly where Jacksonville is concerned, Chris. Says, I agree on the second seed. It's critical to our success, and based on what we've seen, it will be a bit like backing into a good thing. All right, fair enough. But right now, I think we'd all take backing into the two seed right now without too much question at all. Connor in Dublin says, hey, guys, thanks if you read this. Are we forgetting how close we were to beating the Colts? One Maroney fumble, 1 yard away. If we beat the Colts, would you feel better about Sunday's loss? I just think everyone is overreacting a little bit. Well, Connor, it's because that's what we do best. We overreact. Patriots fans, passionate sports fans, all have a tendency to overreact. We all do around here. That's part of what this show is all about, is basically taking your reaction or your overreaction to one particular game or one particular play. We do that every Tuesday on Nitpick Tuesday here in the Playbook, too. So that's overreacting. It's what fans do. you're looking, you choose to look at it somewhat sensibly, and I think that's probably the right thing to do. But fact of the matter is, if they had beaten the Colts, yeah, I totally agree with you. We'd all feel a lot better about Sunday's loss. Number one, because this team would be 8-3 rather than 7-4. Number two, they would certainly be a huge step closer to going ahead and clutching a playoff spot with that win. Number three, they would be right there, at least tied for the lead for that number two spot, which would mean first round bye. So, yeah, we'd all feel a ton better. Well, we'd feel better. Ton better, hard to say because of the way that they lost to the Saints. I mean, it was just ugly, the way that they play. They stunk up the field. But, yeah, I think that there's a reasonable expectation that we'll be feeling better. So we'll try not to overreact for you, Connor. But thank you for putting some relevancy and some, you know, some good, smart, solid thinking into the discussion. Biglow, where have you been?
Have I let you down?
Where have you been?
I've tried, you know, I
thought maybe that you were, you know, let go or something by the
time. No. Still on board.
Okay.
Just busy stretch, John. You know, we're just cranking out shows on Patriots Today. And
you're lying your ass off.
No, we're cranking out shows, Jason. I didn't say quality shows. I didn't say they're any good or anything. They're just time consuming. No, it's, hey, been around, you know, it's just been a bit, you know, been a busy stretch here, you know, with some travel and, holidays and all that and schedule reshuffling, but.
Gotcha.
We're here. We're here, and we're loving it.
Well, tell us then a little bit about Patriots Today before we start talking about fantasy loadouts.
Well, you know, much like the team, rapidly moving on from the Saints to the Dolphins. This week just flying by, and today's show getting much more in-depth on the Dolphins, how the loss of Ronnie Brown has impacted the offense, if at all. Ricky Williams having clearly a career resurgence. For him to be doing what he's doing right now at 32 years old and with, you know, these last 5 or 6 years have been pretty tumultuous for his career. Suspensions, playing CFL, injuries and all that. What he's been able to do has been pretty good. And I think very intriguing what's going to be this weekend is how these Miami cornerbacks match up against the Patriots wideouts, both based on what happened when the Patriots played the Dolphins a month ago and on what the Saints did to Austin Welker. You know, will the Dolphins
try to emulate that?
Will future teams? So I think this is a very interesting week as far as that matchup goes. I have pretty good faith in the Patriots' defense to contain, maybe not stop Ricky Williams or stop their offense, but Chad Henne's had a miserable stretch.
Well, it's also clear that they are
make them one-dimensional.
They are much more multidimensional with Ronnie Brown involved, and obviously Brown is not.
Exactly.
So.
Make them as one-dimensional as they truly are, and then just really when they throw Pat White in there and they try to throw a wrinkle, which I'm sure they will.
Oh, sure.
Just beware of where the ball is. I mean, that's what the Patriots were stressing going into the game a month ago. Beware of where the ball is.
We saw Pat White run triple option offense.
Yeah.
He ran option offense. He ran zone read. He ran a pitch back. He ran, you know, stuff that you used to see in the Veer. So if they're not practicing on that this week, then shame on them, because my guess is Miami probably comes out and runs a lot of that.
Yeah. And it's good that they have pretty good familiarity with Miami because, you know, this was an odd week. You know, you have a Monday night road game. Wednesday usually is your first full day of practice. They ended up having a late walkthrough. And, you know, that sets them back a little bit probably this week. They're at a bit of a disadvantage, two straight road games, a short week, and not really having a chance to have three full practices, more like two. But fortunately for them, it is a team that they're familiar with, and they've just got to be buttoned up as far as recognizing, you know, what kind of offensive formations Miami has and just really capitalize on a team that's kind of reeling now. I mean, that was a bad loss they had to Buffalo last week. Right. Henne looked terrible at the end. And, you know, try to take advantage of a team that's really on its last legs. I mean, Miami loses this, and that's it. You
true.
Know, that's
true.
Division's over. Right. Their season's over. So, you know, the Patriots should look at this game as should look at it as a must-win, because if they can win this game, you know, it's not like they're where they need to be, but if they can win this game, they should be able to shut the book on the AFC East and then focus on really improving on these last four games down the stretch and having as good a seed as they can get.
All right, and Fantasy Lowdown coming up here in just about 5 minutes?
You betcha. All your fantasy news and info. The other AFC East matchup is just 4 hours away. Get you caught up on the news going into that game. And then some, as every week, I mean, it seems like every week we've been going through this, some intriguing quarterback situations that have fantasy implications. And we'll just talk. We'll take your emails, take your questions. A lot to get to.
Got some here already for you.
Oh, okay? Love it.
Save them right here.
We've had a good year for emails.
Good. Excellent
year for emails.
All right, Brian Lowe and the Fantasy Lowdown coming up here in 5 minutes on Patriots.com radio. A couple of quick emails that we'll wrap up with. Kevin says, quick question on the scheduling. How does the NFL determine when division opponents play where? Meaning why in the past, at least 3 years, do the Dolphins and Patriots play in September or October here, and then the December game is in Miami? Wouldn't it be great to play Miami and New England in December? Well, they have in the past, but it's just sort of, I don't think there's no formula. I think it's just sort of indiscriminately chosen. That's kind of how they do things. So there's no real formula for that. It seems to make perfect sense to play Miami down there at this time of year and Miami here, you know, at the other time of year just because of weather conditions. But, yeah, I agree. It'd be great to get Miami up here. Fact is, we had them up here earlier this decade, and they spanked us. Right?
New Year's Day, right? It was New Year's Day.
Was it New Year's Day game?
Well, there's one in particular that I'm thinking of. I think it was the end of the...
Day after. Something.
The end of the 05 season, the last game of the 05 season, Patriots-Dolphins.
Right.
It was the game that the Patriots, I think, it was one of those where they kind of, sort of, maybe would have been better off losing anyways, and they lost. Matt Castle played quite a bit, threw fourth down into the end zone, airmailed someone, and they ended up, you know, having a chance to play Jacksonville to play. I think 2006. When? Oh no, 2006 was they got shut out in Miami in December.
Right.
So they've played down there. 07. The 07 game down there was in October. And why am
You're
I drawing?
Thinking
a blank?
Too hard. We won.
I know we won. I know. Jason, I'm aware that they won all the games in 07. I'm trying to remember where they were. 07 in October was down there, and I think in November was up here. So it was. I think.
Since you have five media guides in front of you that could look this up, I'll grab the one that I have closer to me and look this up
reach.
For you.
I can't reach.
Just going to look it up here.
But, yeah, there's no rhyme or reason necessarily to that. I think what's interesting, Buffalo, they've played in Buffalo late in the season for several straight years now. Obviously, in 03, it was the first game of the year, but... this third straight year, they played fairly late in the year in Buffalo.
In Buffalo, too. Yeah. Yep,
How far
right.
back do you want to go?
Not too far, Jason.
The away game in 07 was in October. Away game in 06.
December.
It was December.
Yeah.
05.
When was the one here in December?
In 07, you mean? Oh, in...
December 23rd of 07 was 07. Here.
Okay.
And 05. It was January 1st, 05, I believe. Or January 1st, 06.
Correct.
Okay. That was the one I was thinking of then.
Yeah.
Okay. So, see, it does happen. It just doesn't seem like it, but it does happen. By the way, I want to mention this as well. Ted Ginn today was named the AFC Special Teams Player of the Month. I don't know if that's a precursor of things to come, you know, for Sunday, but nevertheless, Ted Ginn is apparently good for something. That is going to wrap up this edition of the Playbook. Stick around because Brian Lowe and the Fantasy Lowdown is coming up next. The Patriots and the Miami Dolphins coming up on Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern time from the Landshark Stadium in Miami in south of Florida. And then we'll be back same Pat's time, same Pat's channel next week, kids. Have a great weekend.